I have a dream. These words are known to each of you. Today I can say, I have a need. I need to protect our sky. I need your decision, your help, which means exactly the same you feel when you hear the words, I have a dream.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, in an address to the U.S. Congress, pleading for fighter jets, anti-aircraft weapons, and implementation of a no-fly zone over his country to counter Russian air attacks, invoking the words of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Welcome to Washington Today on C-SPAN Radio for Wednesday, March 16, 2022. President Zelensky also asking members of Congress to empathize, using examples in U.S. history of the Japanese bombing of Pearl Harbor in 1941 and the Al-Qaeda hijacked commercial planes run into buildings in 2001. President Joe Biden announcing today $800 million more in military assistance for Ukraine, but not all that the president of Ukraine asked for. Also today, Federal Reserve raising interest rates a quarter of a percent, first time in years that rates are going up. It's designed to counter high inflation and the uncertainty of the war in Ukraine. Justice Department charging five people with working with Chinese intelligence to try to silence U.S. residents who have been critical of China's government. And the anniversary of the Atlanta spa shooting massacre 1 year ago targeting Asian Americans, a memorial on Capitol Hill. This from the New York Post. Republican members of Congress moved by Wednesday's rousing address from Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky called on the White House to reverse course and allow Poland to send more than two dozen MiG-29 fighter jets to the aid of the Kyiv government. In his remarks, Zelensky pleaded with lawmakers to establish a no-fly zone over his country and provide aircraft to help it defend against pounding Russian aerial attacks. Joint meeting of Congress was held not in the U.S. House chamber, but in the Capitol Visitors Center Auditorium, a large video screen in front, because the speech was given virtually. Introducing the President of Ukraine, the House Speaker, Nancy Pelosi.
Mr. President, it is my honor to present to you the Congress of the United States, which has great respect and admiration and appreciation for your courageous leadership. Members of Congress, I have the high privilege and distinct honor of presenting to you the President of Ukraine, Volodymyr Zelensky. Slava Ukraina! Slava Ukraina!
Glory to heroes.
My colleagues, Slava Ukraina! Slava Ukraina!
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi with the introduction, a standing ovation for the president who appeared on the screen. And in his remarks, citing two prominent examples in history of the United States being attacked by an enemy from the air, as Ukraine is now being attacked by Russia. Pearl Harbor, Hawaii, by Japan at the start of World War II in 1941, and the Al-Qaeda hijacked commercial plane, September 11th, 2001.
In your great history, you have pages that would allow you to understand Ukrainians, understand us now, when you need it right now, when we need you right now. Remember Pearl Harbor, terrible morning of December 7, 1941, when your sky was black from the planes attacking you. Just remember it. Remember September the 11th, a terrible day in 2001 when evil tried to turn your cities, independent territories, in battlefields, when innocent people were attacked from air. Yes. Just like no one else expected it, you could not stop it. Our country experiences the same every day, right now, at this moment, every night, for 3 weeks now. Various Ukrainian cities, Odessa and Kharkiv, Chernihiv and Sumy, Zhytomyr and Lviv, Mariupol and Dnipro, Russia has turned the Ukrainian sky into a source of death for thousands of people. Russian troops have already fired nearly 1,000 missiles at Ukraine, countless bombs. They use drones to kill us with precision. This is a terror that Europe has not seen, for 80 years, and we are asking for a reply, for an answer to this terror from the whole world. Is this a lot to ask for? To create a no-fly zone over Ukraine to save people? Is this too much to ask? Humanitarian no-fly zone, something that Ukraine, that Russia would not be able to terrorize our free cities. If this is too much to ask, we offer an alternative. You know what kind of defense systems we need, S-300 and other similar systems. You know how much depends on the battlefield, on the ability to use aircraft, powerful, strong aviation to protect our people, our freedom, our land, aircraft that can help Ukraine, help Europe.
The Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, through an interpreter addressing the U.S. Congress remotely, members of Congress in Washington and Zelensky in Kyiv. Zelensky also playing a graphic video during his presentation with before and after images showing the destruction and death from Russian missile strikes on residential areas in a number of Ukrainian cities, women and children crying, also bodies on the pavement, and then bodies being buried in a mass grave. After that video, Zelensky ending his speech with a few minutes of English.
Today, it's not enough to be the leader of the nation. Today, it takes to be the leader of the world. Being the leader of the world means to be the leader of peace. Peace in your country doesn't depend anymore only on you and your people. It depends on those next to you, on those who are strong. Strong doesn't mean weak. Strong is brave and ready to fight for the life of his citizens and citizens of the world, for human rights, for freedom, for the right to live decently and to die when your time comes, and not when it's wanted by someone else, by your neighbor. Today, the Ukrainian people are defending not only Ukraine. We are fighting for the values of Europe and the world, sacrificing our lives in the name of the future. That's why today the American people are helping not just Ukraine, but Europe and the world to keep the planet alive, to keep justice in history. Now I'm almost 45 years old. Today my age stopped when the heart of more than 100 children stopped beating. I see no sense in life if it cannot stop the death. And this is my main mission as the leader of my people, great Ukrainians. And as the leader of my nation, I am addressing the President Biden. You are the leader of the nation, of your great nation. I wish you to be the leader of the world. Being the leader of the world means to be the leader of peace. Thank you. Slava Ukraini.
Glory to Ukraine.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky speaking virtually from Kyiv to the U.S. Congress in Washington. After that speech, some U.S. lawmakers reacting at a microphone set up outside the room, including Congressman Kevin McCarthy, the House Republican leader.
I thought President Zelensky was very powerful, as many of you watched. He made the case very strongly. When you think about what President Biden should do, I think there's a bipartisan movement right here. Provide them the MiGs. Provide them the planes where they can create a no-fly zone. Provide them the armament that they need to continue to fight a war that they did not create. I thought the video was one of the most moving moments in there. Made the case of the murdering of innocent people, that war crimes are being committed, that America and the world cannot sit by and ignore. We need to put a stop to this. And I think greater pressure, greater armament, and why the MiGs were not provided weeks ago, as many of us requested, put them at a disadvantage.
Is there any scenario where a no-fly zone, the no-fly zone that he requested, would be supported by you and by the United States?
Look, I think right now, provide them the MiGs that they can create a no-fly zone. The entire time speaking with those in Ukraine and the president himself, he's never asked for American men or women to be in a battle. All he's ever asked for is give us the opportunity to defend ourselves. Don't let us fight with sticks. I've had conversations with the president long before this moment came. My advice to him was provide them the armament earlier to deter Putin from ever making these decisions. And the entire time, President Biden always said it would be the sanctions afterwards. And then when the sanctions came, he said it'd take months to work. Well, Ukrainian people cannot wait months. The world cannot wait months if we sit by and watch innocent people being murdered.
House Republican Leader Kevin McCarthy, the Republican from California, the minority leader, speaking with reporters. Both the Biden administration and NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg have been ruling out creating a no-fly zone with U.S. or NATO forces, no-fly zone over Ukraine, arguing that it would require shooting down Russian fighter jets who violate it, putting the U.S. and NATO in direct military conflict with Russia, and also noting Russia has nuclear weapons. Biden administration also has not approved that Polish government proposal to have the U.S. military take control of Polish Soviet-era MiG-29 fighter planes and then provide them to the Ukrainians, again, avoiding what the White House perceives as could be an escalation between the U.S. and Russia on this war. Some more reaction from members of Congress to President Zelensky's speech today. Senator Dan Sullivan, Republican from Alaska, saying the U.S. needs to change its mindset.
I think one thing that came out of that is throughout the entire conflict, we have had this assumption with our intel community, with all the briefings we get, that it's just a matter of time when they're going to lose. That's been the underlying assumption from our intel community, and I'm not blaming them. It's been a lot of people's assumption. When that happens, then all decisions that we make in our government are based on that idea. They're going to lose eventually. I think we need to change that underlying dynamic, particularly when you see a rousing, inspiring speech like that, which is They could win. Maybe not great chances, but they could win. And if we start thinking like that, I think the options that we are considering as a government change. And I think that's actually really important. It's an insight that I will say my friend Sheldon Whitehouse gave to me. But it's a really important one. And I think it's a bipartisan concern that we can all start rethinking how we're even framing this conflict.
Senator Dan Sullivan, Republican from Alaska, referring to Senator Sheldon Whitehouse, Democrat from Rhode Island. A new Monmouth University poll out today of Americans showing 69% support sending more U.S. military troops to Eastern Europe to deter Russian President Vladimir Putin. 41% support putting U.S. troops on Ukrainian soil. Congressman Gregory Meeks, Democrat from New York, chair of the House Foreign Affairs Committee, also speaking with reporters after President Zelensky's speech. And he refers to the man standing beside him, Republican Congressman Michael McCaul of Texas, the Foreign Affairs Committee ranking member.
Mike McCaul and I are here. I'm not here as a Democrat today. And you'll hear from him, he's not here as a Republican, we're here as Americans. And after seeing and listening to President Zelensky, if we don't come together as Americans and with our NATO allies, then that helps Putin win. This is about the time for unity. And listening to the plea of President Zelensky to make sure that we are giving him everything that he needs. The one that's responsible for this humanitarian disaster is the evilness of Vladimir Putin. He's the one that we should all be focused on stopping and making sure that we're saving the lives of the Ukrainian people. So, in answers to questions as to whether or not we should continue to, you know, as we did last week, close to $14 billion for weapons and humanitarian aid, another $200-300 million, the money should not be an issue with the United States Congress in a bipartisan way. That vote was us together. We win this and we stand with President Zelensky by doing it together. When we went over, Mr. McCall and I, to Poland just about a week ago, a little over a week ago, we went there with one message to our allies in Poland and to our allies in NATO and, of course, the Ukrainian people. We're going to stand with President Zelensky, and we're going to do it together as Americans.
Congressman Gregory Meeks, Democrat from New York, chair of the Foreign Affairs Committee, with reporters on Capitol Hill. USA Today writing, in a speech aired on Russian TV, Russian President Vladimir Putin declared that Russia's so-called special operation in Ukraine is going according to plan, again declining to call it an invasion. The West thinks we will step back, Putin said, according to a translation from Medusa, a Latvia-based media outlet. The West does not understand Russia, he declared. Putin repeated a number of false claims about the invasion of Ukraine, including the conspiracy theory that Ukraine was developing weapons of mass destruction like nuclear and bioweapons. That reporting from USA Today. President Biden also thanking the Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky for his speech today to the U.S. Congress. President Biden speaking in the Eisenhower Executive Office Building next to the White House.
I want to begin by thanking President Zelensky for his passionate message this morning. I listened to it in the private residence, and he was convincing and significant speech. He speaks for a people who have shown remarkable courage and strength in the face of brutal aggression. Courage and strength that's inspired not only Ukrainians, but the entire world. Putin is inflicting appalling devastation and horror on Ukraine, bombing apartment buildings, maternity wards, hospitals. I mean, it's god-awful. I was speaking about this with our commander behind me here, General Milley. I mean, it just is amazing. Yesterday, we saw reports that Russian forces were holding hundreds of doctors and patients hostage in the largest hospital in Mariupol. These are atrocities. They're an outrage to the world. And the world is united in our support for Ukraine and our determination to make Putin pay a very heavy price.
President Joe Biden in the Eisenhower Executive Office Building, referring to General Mark Milley, chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. President Biden today also announcing another package of military aid for Ukraine.
Now I'm once again using my presidential authority to activate an additional security assistance to continue to help Ukraine fend off Russia's assault. An additional $800 million in assistance. That brings the total of new U.S. security assistance to Ukraine to $1 billion just this week. These are direct transfers of equipment from our Department of Defense to the Ukrainian military to help them as they fight against this invasion. And I thank the Congress for appropriating these funds. This new package on its own is going to provide unprecedented assistance to Ukraine. It includes 800 anti-aircraft systems to make sure the Ukrainian military can continue to stop the planes and helicopters that have been attacking their people and to defend their Ukrainian airspace. And at the request of President Zelensky, we have identified and are helping Ukraine acquire additional longer-range anti-aircraft systems and the munitions for those systems. Our new assistance package also includes 9,000 anti-armor systems. These are portable, high accuracy shoulder-mounted missiles that the Ukrainian forces have been using with great effect to destroy invading tanks and armored vehicles. It'll include 7,000 small arms, machine guns, shotguns, grenade launchers to equip the Ukrainians, including the brave women and men who are defending their cities as civilians, and they're on the countryside as well. And as well as the ammunition, artillery, and mortar rounds to go with small arms, 20 million rounds in total, 20 million rounds. And this will include drones, which demonstrates our commitment to sending our most cutting-edge systems to Ukraine for its defense.
Morgan Chalfant is White House correspondent for The Hill, joining us now. President Biden announcing more military aid for Ukraine, but not specifically what the Ukrainian president and many in the U.S. Congress are calling for. What's the latest on this?
Thanks so much for having me. So basically, the president answered Zelensky's call with a declaration that we'd be sending $800 million more in security assistance to Ukraine. This involves drones, small arms, anti-aircraft systems and anti-armor systems as well. Now, we don't know. The administration's also said they're looking at providing longer-range anti-aircraft systems, which might get at some of the things Zelensky was talking about in the address today. He did call for the for S-300s, which are Soviet-made anti-aircraft systems. But the administration hasn't really given any clarity on what specific systems they're looking at there. Where he didn't make good on, which it's no surprise, is he didn't say that the U.S. would be supporting a no-fly zone. That's something that the administration's really ruled out because they say that it would be potentially viewed as escalatory by the Russians and could end up having U.S. or NATO planes engage the Russian planes, which is something that the Biden administration and NATO allies have been really trying to avoid.
As mentioned, a lot of members of Congress are calling for sending the additional heavy weapons. Any concern at the White House that this is all playing out very publicly, a debate in Washington about how to aid Ukraine?
So they are pretty careful with what they say. And I actually have to say I was surprised by the level of detail in the announcement that the White House made today in terms of the weapon systems that they are providing in this new tranche of assistance and also that they have provided. It was very descriptive, more descriptive than I've seen them be in the past. But it does seem like they're trying to not talk about every detail of everything and keep some things close and private. Obviously, a big priority of President Biden has been keeping allies all on the same page. So he really wants to get the U.S. and its European allies and G7 in some cases, behind a unified response to Russian aggression.
While we're talking about military aid, there are still diplomatic efforts underway to try to stop the war. What is the White House reading on how that's going?
So the White House's view is that they want to make this as costly as they can for Putin and weaken his stance in terms of imposing these punishing sanctions and therefore strengthen Ukraine's hand by doing that and also providing Ukraine with weapons to defend itself. So that going into any negotiation, Ukraine would have an upper hand. They haven't been very involved to this point in any diplomatic negotiations between the two countries. I do think something that jumped out to me today was that Jake Sullivan, the national security advisor, had a call with a high-level Russian official to warn him that there would be consequences if Russia uses chemical weapons against Ukraine. That's the first high-level engagement between the U.S. and the Russians since before the war started 3 weeks ago. So that's certainly a sign that there's engagement, and it is a sign of concerns on the part of the U.S. that Russia could be weighing using chemical weapons in Ukraine.
We're talking with Morgan Chalfant from The Hill. We found out yesterday President Biden will be heading to Europe next week to be at a NATO summit in Brussels. Any more details today about the trip?
So there's not a ton of details, and the details aren't completely finalized. What we do know is that he is attending a NATO summit and he's going to be at this European Council summit as well. I think a big priority of the president is going to be showing solidarity with NATO allies and reaffirming the U.S. commitment to NATO in a similar way that Vice President Harris did last week. The White House has not ruled out a meeting with Ukrainian President Zelensky, though Jen Psaki said yesterday it wasn't necessarily on the table. And there's also no word on whether President Biden could visit Poland and visit refugees. So I think we'll find out more in the next week or so on the precise details of what else he may be doing in Europe.
Morgan Chalfant is White House correspondent for The Hill. Find her stories at thehill.com. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much.
And more on the U.S. response to Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Also, the Federal Reserve raising interest rates when Washington Today continues in a minute. Welcome back to Washington Today, which you can get as a podcast on the free C-SPAN Now mobile video app and wherever you get your podcasts. From the Associated Press, the Federal Reserve launched a high-risk effort Wednesday to tame the worst inflation since the early 1980s, raising its benchmark short-term interest rate and signaling up to 6 additional rate hikes this year. The Fed's quarter-point hike in its key rate, which it had pinned near zero since the pandemic recession struck 2 years ago, marks the start of its effort to curb the high inflation that's followed the recovery from the recession. The rate hikes will eventually mean higher loan rates for many consumers and businesses. Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell making this announcement in a virtual news conference. He also spoke a lot about the effect of the war in Ukraine, what it's having and could have on the U.S. and world economies.
I want to begin by acknowledging the tremendous hardship the Ukrainian people are suffering as a result of Russia's invasion. The human toll is tragic. The financial and economic implications for the global economy and the U.S. economy are highly uncertain. At the Federal Reserve, we are strongly committed to achieving the monetary policy goals that Congress has given us, maximum employment and price stability. Today, in support of these goals, the FOMC raised its policy interest rate by 0.25 percentage point. The economy is very strong, and against the backdrop of an extremely tight labor market and high inflation, the committee anticipates that ongoing increases in the target range for the federal funds rate will be appropriate. In addition, we expect to begin reducing the size of our balance sheet at a coming meeting. Economic activity expanded at a robust 5.5% pace last year, reflecting progress on vaccinations and the reopening of the economy, fiscal and monetary policy support, and the healthy financial positions of households and businesses. The rapid spread of the Omicron variant led to some slowing in economic activity early this year, but cases have declined sharply since mid-January, and the slowdown seems to have been mild and brief. Although the invasion of Ukraine and related events represent a downside risk to the outlook for economic activity, FOMC participants continue to foresee solid growth. As shown in our summary of economic projections, the median projection for real GDP growth stands at 2.8% this year, 2.2% next year, and 2% in 2024. The labor market has continued to strengthen and is extremely tight. Over the first 2 months of the year, employment rose by more than 1 million jobs. In February, the unemployment rate hit a post-pandemic low of 3.8%, a bit below the median of committee participants' estimates of its longer-run normal level. The improvements in labor market conditions have been widespread, including for workers at the lower end of the wage distribution, as well as for African Americans and Hispanics. Labor demand is very strong, and while labor force participation has increased somewhat, labor supply remains subdued. As a result, employers are having difficulties filling job openings, and wages are rising at their fastest pace in many years. FOMC participants expect the labor market to remain strong, with the median projection for the unemployment rate declining to 3.5% by the end of this year and remaining near that level thereafter. Inflation remains well above our longer-run goal of 2%. Aggregate demand is strong, and bottlenecks and supply constraints are limiting how quickly production can respond. These supply disruptions have been larger and longer lasting than anticipated, exacerbated by waves of the virus here and abroad, and price pressures have spread to a broader range of goods and services. Additionally, higher energy prices are driving up overall inflation. The surge in prices of crude oil and other commodities that resulted from Russia's invasion of Ukraine will put additional upward pressure on near-term inflation here at home. We understand that high inflation imposes significant hardship, especially on those least able to meet the higher costs of essentials like food, housing, and transportation. We know that the best thing we can do to support a strong labor market is to promote a long expansion, and that is only possible in an environment of price stability. As we emphasize in our policy statement, with appropriate firming in the stance of monetary policy, we expect inflation to return to 2% while the labor market remains strong. That said, inflation is likely to take longer to return to our price stability goal than previously expected.
Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell started his virtual news conference as the Fed announced a quarter-point hike in its key interest rate. President Joe Biden calling on companies to decrease gas prices, saying that the cost of the pump should reflect the recent decrease in oil per barrel. The president tweeting oil prices are decreasing. Gas prices should too. Last time oil was $96 a barrel, gas was $3.62 a gallon. Now it's $4.31. Oil and gas companies shouldn't pad their profits at the expense of hardworking Americans. Wall Street today, the Dow up 518, NASDAQ up 487, S&P up 95. Senator Lindsey Graham, Republican of South Carolina, writes Yahoo News, on Wednesday doubled down on calling for the assassination of Russian President Vladimir Putin, a suggestion that has been widely rebuked by lawmakers in both parties. The article goes on, as he did on Twitter earlier this month, Graham explained that he wants the Russian people to carry out Putin's assassination, not the United States.
Do you still stand by your call to have Putin be assassinated? Do you still stand by your
call? I hope he'll be taken out. One way or the other. I don't care how they take him out. I don't care if we send him to The Hague and try him. I just want him to go. Yes, I'm on record. Please understand, Senator Lindsey Graham, if John McCain were here, he'd be saying the same thing, I think. It's time for him to go. He's a war criminal. I wish somebody had taken Hitler out in the 30s. So, yes, that Vladimir Putin is not a legitimate leader. He is a war criminal. He needs to be dealt with by the Russian people. I'm not asking to invade Russia to take him out. I'm not asking to send American ground forces in Ukraine to fight the Russian army. I am asking the Russian people to rise up and end this reign of terror for you and the world at large, that if you follow Putin, you're going to have zero future. I encourage what Zelensky said, that every American company leave Russia right now. Leave today. I encourage the world to strangle the Russian economy. Our war is not with the Russian people. In many ways, they're as much of a victim as Putin as anybody else. The young journalist yesterday who held up the sign, now that takes guts. People like that change history. So how do I think this ends? I think if we stick with it, that if we help the Ukrainians fight for their own freedom, provide them reasonable assistance on the military front to regain control of their skies, help them with food and clothing and economic assistance, and strangle the Russian economy, that there will be forces emerge inside of Russia to end this. So I think the world is better off without Putin. The sooner the better, and I don't care how we do it.
Senator Lindsey Graham, Republican from South Carolina, a news conference on Capitol Hill in Washington. Chief prosecutor of the International Criminal Court telling CNN in an interview in Lviv, Ukraine, that he went to Ukraine because he has reasonable grounds to believe that war crimes have been committed in the conflict between Russia and Ukraine. And in Washington, Christo Grozev, a journalist with Bellingcat, an investigative group that uses social media and open source intelligence looking at issues like these, telling a U.S. House subcommittee that they have evidence now of potential war crimes being committed in Ukraine.
In just 19 days of war, Bellingcat has recorded more than 350 incidents that have caused harm to civilians, most of this deadly harm. Of these, just over 10%, between 35 and 40, appear to be egregious cases of violations of the law of warfare. with unwarranted targeting of residential buildings, and in some cases, even hospitals and maternity wards, and with indiscriminate use of inhumane munitions, such as cluster bombs, in or near residential areas. While Bellingcat has not yet completed the process of attribution of origin of attack, most of these attacks appear plausibly attributable to the Russian side of the conflict. And in some cases, the Russian government has even unapologetically taken credit for the attacks on civilians.
Christo Grazev, investigative journalist with Bellingcat, testifying before a House Foreign Affairs subcommittee in Washington. Ukraine's foreign minister tweeting today that Russia bombed a theater in Mariupol, Ukraine, where hundreds of civilians were hiding out. Dmytro Kuleba writing, "The building is now fully ruined. Stop Russian war criminals." Russian law enforcement announcing 3 criminal cases against people posting what Russia considers false information about the war. One case, a Russian language cookbook author and popular blogger who was born in Ukraine, now living outside of Russia. Russian authorities accusing her of posting on Instagram that contains, quote, deliberately false information about the use of the armed forces of the Russian Federation to destroy cities and civilian population in Ukraine, including children. And she responded with a post, "I have been officially declared to be a decent person." The Chinese government's attempt to suppress dissenting voices within the United States is the focus of 3 cases unsealed today by the Justice Department. Assistant Attorney General Matthew Olson speaking at a news conference in Washington.
We are here today to announce 3 important cases unsealed today in the Eastern District of New York. These cases expose attempts by the government of the People's Republic of China to suppress dissenting voices within the United States, to demonstrate how the PRC seeks to stalk, intimidate, and silence those who oppose them. In discussing these cases, I want to be very clear that the department remains focused on the threats and actions of the PRC government and its agents, not the Chinese people or people of Chinese descent, who are often the victims of these crimes. While separate matters, these cases are all very much related. One shows an insidious strategy to collect information on dissidents in order to target them and, in some cases, to imprison pro-democracy advocates abroad. One case describes a conspiracy to derail the congressional candidacy of an American citizen and military veteran who also was a former student protester at the 1989 protest in Tiananmen Square and later escaped to the United States. And one shows a campaign to surveil and harass an artist engaged in free and peaceful expression. All 3 of these cases show that if you report such abuse, U.S. law enforcement will respond and demonstrate that law enforcement was able to disrupt these plots and bring perpetrators to justice.
Assistant Attorney General Matthew Olson, a news conference at the Justice Department in Washington. In all, 5 people have been charged with acting on behalf of the Chinese secret police to spy on and harass U.S. residents critical of China. 3 of the 5 have been arrested, according to the Justice Department. 2 remain at large. From the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, 1 year ago today, a gunman killed 8 people at 3 Asian-owned spas in metro Atlanta. The rampage struck terror among Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders nationwide and led to a conversation about violence against members of those communities. Congress passed legislation to curb the rise of anti-Asian hate crimes, which President Joe Biden signed into law in May. Today in Washington, on the steps of the U.S. Capitol building, a remembrance ceremony. The speakers included Congresswoman Judy Chu, Democrat from California, who chairs the Congressional Asian Pacific American Caucus.
I will never forget the moment that 1 year ago today, a gunman entered 3 Asian-owned spas and killed 8 people, including 6 Asian women. He was so deliberate in his desire to kill Asian women that he drove 27 miles between the spas to ensure he would hit his targets. Because of this, America was finally shocked awake to the reality of anti-Asian hate. But in reality, for over a year, xenophobic slurs like China virus and Kung Flu have been terrorizing Asian American communities across the country with thousands of anti-Asian hate crimes and incidents. Immediately after this shooting, I led a delegation to Atlanta, where we retraced the shooter steps and met with the victims' families. I will never forget seeing the tears streaming down their faces, thunderstruck by the loss of their loved ones. Thankfully, the country rallied together to stop Asian hate with events, rallies, and over 1 billion interactions on our National Day of Action alone. Today, we will be sharing the stories and remembering the victims of the over 11,000 impacted by anti-Asian violence.
Congresswoman Judy Chu, Democrat from California, chair of the Asian Pacific American Caucus in Congress, at today's remembrance in Washington on the steps of the U.S. Capitol. The gunman in the Atlanta spa shootings a year ago, Robert Aaron Long, pleaded guilty to murder and other charges related to the shooting in Cherokee County, Georgia, receiving multiple life sentences without parole, but he's pleaded not guilty to additional charges in Fulton County. Singer-songwriter Carole King testifying today before a U.S. House subcommittee about forest management and wildfires. She says she's a 44-year resident of Idaho, and for 38 of those years, she was in a rural area. Her nearest neighbor, she says, was a national forest. Today, she called on Congress to stop what she calls taxpayer subsidizing of clear-cutting national forests under the guise of forest management.
Before the infrastructure law was enacted, more than 200 independent scientists, wrote a letter asking House committee chairs to remove the logging provisions from that law. Their data led them to write that thinning can often increase fire intensity, while protected forests are more likely to lower the intensity should a fire occur. When humans manage a forest, they often clear cut, leaving the unprofitable parts to dry out. Clear cuts are tinderboxes. You can see that on the slide. Logging emits 8 times more CO2 per acre than the combination of wildfire and insects combined. Forest degradation accelerates climate change. Yes, wildfires are getting worse, not because we have too many trees, but because of extreme climate-driven weather events accelerated by removal of trees. Trees store carbon. Independent scientists not funded by the Forest Service or a company that profits from logging tell us that the most effective way to protect homes is to harden them with fire-resistant materials and create defensible space. When other scientists promote removing trees beyond 100 feet from a home or a community, which logging companies do, the headline becomes, "Scientists disagree." This confuses the public. Let me clear up the confusion. When a scientist tells you that the solution is to remove even more trees from our national forests, look for who is paying that scientist.
Carole King, well-known singer and songwriter, testifying before the House Oversight and Reform Subcommittee, holding a hearing today on wildfire management. Commercial logging is one of the ways the U.S. Forest Service prevents wildfires, it says, along with prescribed burns and thinning. Another witness today was the U.S. Fire Service Chief Randy Moore. You can find the full hearing archived on our website, cspan.org. And thanks for listening to Washington Today. Get more Washington stories sent right to you each day by subscribing to C-SPAN's evening newsletter, Word for Word. You can subscribe at c-span.org/connect. Hope you have a good night.